This is Jordan Seculo today on Jay Seculo Live. Today in the U.S. Senate, closing arguments from the House managers and the president's legal team are finishing today before the United States Senate. Full analysis of this entire impeachment sham today on Jay Seculo Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Well, let me tell you, it's nice to be back in the studio here at Jay Seculo Live after 2 weeks. You know, I was noting down, this began on January 21st was our first day inside the U.S. Senate chamber. This will finish on Wednesday, February 5th. Now, this will be the final day that our legal team representing the president, both from the White House and the president's legal team representing the president in his personal capacity, will be making their closing statements. Adam Schiff is speaking right now. He'll probably reserve the rest of his time so he can rebut and then continue to attack the president again for one more hour until what happens next is then the senators have the next day and a half or so, really. So you get Tuesday and Wednesday where they'll be able to make their speeches during the day, some at night. You'll hear some about this. But the truth is, the key time is that the president will deliver a State of the Union tomorrow night. We'll have full coverage of that tomorrow on the broadcast. And the president will be acquitted Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. That vote will occur. There's no way, of course, they're getting anywhere close to two-thirds of the U.S. Senate, 67, when they failed to even get enough votes, which was just a 51 vote, to get witnesses. So Adam Schiff and his team, they totally failed. Let me just be clear about that. He could talk all he wants, be nasty all he wants, say, we were unprepared, this and that, this, that. I'm not talking about any senators here. I'm just talking about Adam Schiff and the House Democrats who put forward these managers. They failed. They could not convince the moderate Republicans to even go along, enough moderate Republicans to go along with what they wanted, which to extend this trial and add witnesses. You understand that, folks? To extend this trial and add witnesses. So right now, Adam Schiff and his team, they went for a little bit less than an hour. Then you'll hear from the president's legal team. If that occurs while we're on air, the recess is for another half hour. We'll go right to that. But sometimes those recesses, I will tell you, this is my first day not in the chamber and be back with you. Those 30-minute recesses can quickly become 45 minutes to an hour, just getting everybody wrangled back in. Let me welcome two new radio broadcasts. What a time to be carrying the full hour of Jay Seculo Live to 99.5 FM Faith Talk in Little Rock, Arkansas. We're going to be live each day at 11 a.m. Central Time and on 101, the FM, The Answer in Little Rock, Arkansas. 101.1 FM, The Answer in Little Rock, Arkansas. Right after Sean Hannity at 5 p.m. Central Time, carrying the full hour of our broadcast. So we want to welcome our new listeners on 99.5 FM, Faith Talk in Little Rock, and 101.1 FM, The Answer in Little Rock as well. What a time to be joining us because, again, you're getting, and I will get into it later in the show, what it was like being there. In a sense, very much, you are in the chamber. You do not have your phone. Yeah, I would try to call into the radio broadcast at the beginning of the show or middle of the show right before we went in just to give people a little update. But we were very cautious about, like, giving away arguments, saying anything that would hurt our client, the president. And again, what I wanted to cover really was what was so key today, and then again, which is how we got to that critical witness vote Friday night and got the victory there to get this thing starting to be shut down. I'm taking your phone calls. If you got phone calls about any of this, what it was like being there, what goes on that you don't see on television, 1-800-684-3110, especially that very narrow C-SPAN feed for most of the time, 1-800-684-3110. And let's not forget Iowa caucuses. Bernie Sanders, the communist, is he going to win tonight? 1-800-684-3110. I have some comments, too, about those senators asking questions. It was pretty unique. We'll be back on Jay Seculo Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So on Friday evening, we knew we were going to get the vote, ultimately, on witnesses. There was supposed to be a four-hour debate, 2 hours aside, on whether or not there should be witnesses or additional evidence called. And then how do you get to the final vote on will there be at all even votes on specific witnesses? And it took much longer than what you would think. You'd think you'd come in at 1 o'clock and 4 hours, it's 5 o'clock. So it got later and later. But ultimately, my dad, this is a four-minute soundbite, folks. But remember Adam Schiff kept saying throughout this to the senators, he was lying to the senators, that this will get done in a week. All they have to do on the other side is give up all the due process rights of the president to the U.S. Senate. Give up all. And then my dad made a compelling case. He's lost at a district court level before, lost at a circuit court level before, and then won 9-0 before for his client at the U.S. Supreme Court. It's why you don't give up your due process rights as a citizen, including if you are the president of the United States. But he made this point too, because remember, the weakest part of this case was one, it was entirely partisan impeachment, and that should never come before the Senate again. Let's be clear about that. If you get an entirely partisan impeachment, not a single member, and not even a group of members of the president's own party joining, whether it's Republican or Democrat, no president should have to go through that, and the Senate should not have to go through that either, because it's absurd. But listen to this, because you kept hearing, we can get the depositions done in a week and we'll take some of their witnesses. Chuck Schumer even said on the floor of the Senate, we've got it in the congressional record, we could call whichever and whoever witnesses we wanted to. And as my dad said, I think you heard on the show, we'd take Adam Schiff, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, the whistleblower, and everybody on Adam Schiff's intelligence committee that had contact with the whistleblower. That's that contact that he initially misled the public about, or if you want to say lied about, when he said he had no contact at all and then had to come back and clarify that misstatement. It was a disaster for the House Democrats from the beginning. They could not, I think there's a beautiful answer by Patrick Philbin from the White, he's a deputy White House counsel. And I'm sure a lot of you got to know him very well over these past 2 weeks. If you're following close, he's brilliant, a brilliant person. It was just an honor to work with this team. I will tell you, this was an incredible team that the president of the United States assembled. Whether you're talking about Patrick Philbin and Pat Cipollone and Jay Sekulow and Jane Raskin, of course, Alan Dershowitz, Ken Starr, Robert Ray, Eric Hirschman, and then those of us who were there who didn't necessarily do speaking roles. And that was just the people you saw on the floor of the well of the Senate. Then we had two more offices full of people in the United States Senate who I guarantee you to this day are still working very hard because this is not yet over. But I will tell you that when they made that argument that we have, you know, we could get it all done in a week, you can have whoever you want. My dad made it clear to the Senate, it's not going to be a week, even under the Adam Schiff standard. Here's why. Take a listen for Facebook and Periscope. You can watch.
Over a seven-day period, you did hear evidence. You heard evidence from 13 different witnesses, 192 video clips, and as my colleague, the Deputy White House Counsel, said, over 28,000 pages of documents. You heard testimony from Gordon Sondland. He's the United States Ambassador to the European Union. You heard that testimony. He testified in the House proceedings. I did not have an opportunity to cross-examine him. If we get witnesses, I have to have that opportunity. William Taylor, former acting United States Ambassador to the Ukraine, testified. You heard his testimony. We didn't get the opportunity to cross-examine him. He would be called. Tim Morrison, the former senior director for Europe and Russia of the National Security Council. You saw his testimony. They put it up. We didn't get an opportunity. We did not have an opportunity to cross-examine him. Jennifer Williams, special advisor on Europe and Russia for Vice President Mike Pence. You saw her testimony. They put it up. I did not have the opportunity to cross-examine her. If we call witnesses, we would have to have that opportunity. David Holmes, the political counsel to the United States Embassy in Ukraine, saw testimony from him. We're not able to cross-examine. If he's called, or if we get witnesses, we will call the ambassador, and we will cross-examine. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, you saw his testimony, appeared before the House. We didn't have the opportunity to cross-examine him. If we call witnesses, we will, of course, have that right to cross-examine him. Fiona Hill, she is the former senior director for Europe and Russia on National Security Council. She testified before the House. If we have witnesses, we have the opportunity to call her then and cross-examine Fiona Hill. Kurt Volker, former United States Special Representative for Ukraine negotiations. They called him. We did not have the opportunity to cross-examine. If we're calling witnesses, these are witnesses you've heard from, we would have the right to call witnesses and to cross-examine Mr. Volker. George Kent, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs. You saw his testimony. They called him. If we have witnesses, we have the right to call that witness and to cross-examine Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent. The former United States Ambassador to Ukraine, Ambassador Yovanovitch, they called her. You saw that testimony. We did not have the opportunity to cross-examine her. If we have witnesses, we would have to call her. Laura Cooper, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia. They called her. You saw her witness testimony right here. We did not have the opportunity to cross-examine her. We would have to be given that opportunity. These are witnesses against the president. Laura Cooper, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia. Again, same thing. David Hale, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. He was called by the House. You saw his testimony. We never had the opportunity to cross-examine. If we have witnesses, we have to have the opportunity to do that. There were other witnesses that were called, or you saw their testimony or heard their testimony, where it was referred to Catherine Croft, the Special Advisor for Ukraine Negotiations, Department of the State, Mark Sandy, the Deputy Associate Director for National Security Programs, and Christopher Anderson, Special Advisor for Ukraine Negotiation, Department of State. You heard their testimony referred to. We did not have the opportunity to cross-examine them. So this isn't going to happen if witnesses are called in a week. Now, that's just the witnesses that have been produced that you have seen by the House managers. You are being called upon to make consequential, constitutional decisions. Consequential decisions for our Constitution.
You know, Thad, I played that because I thought it was a powerful moment. I was there Friday before the Senate took up the final vote, which really put a nail in the coffin for the House manager's case to continue this trial, really to continue to try and dirty the president. They know they'd never were going to have the 67 votes to impeach, the two-thirds majority. So they wanted to continue this out because they thought this was a good strategy for Democrats because I guess their candidates are so bad. I mean, we got the Iowa caucuses tonight, and three of their candidates couldn't even return. It was getting very difficult for them to return. Klobuchar, Warren, who really, I mean, I've got some points to make about that. I will wait until the final votes come in Wednesday. All I will say is this. For Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Klobuchar to be asking questions during an impeachment trial about a candidate that they are likely going to face raises serious questions about political interference in this upcoming election if one of them were to have the nomination. Now, some of their questions, I think Elizabeth Warren, thank you very much for attacking the Chief Justice. Good job there. But then, you know, I thought it was important to play that because for the Senate, as a deliberative body the way it is, they kept pointing to Clinton, and they brought three witnesses in. They forgot to tell you, and we do point out later, and my dad pointed out later in these remarks, and we could play it for you, but I'll just say it, that all three witnesses that testified in the Senate in the Clinton impeachment, all three, all the issues of privilege had already been worked out. They either testified before a congressional committee, Congress, or the grand jury. So there was no question about privilege or anything like that. Here, you have to just start with the 17 that we didn't get a chance to cross-examine and go from there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Jordan, that's why I thought it was so critical to go through it as deliberately as your dad did. Number one, to make the main point that he made, which is, look, we haven't had an opportunity to cross-examine any of these 17 witnesses. We absolutely would need that right. But then secondly, Jordan, you're living in a fantasy land if you think that the majority is going to dominate all of the witnesses that are called in the United States House, and then we're going to get to the United States Senate, and the minority is going to dominate all the witnesses. So we're going to cross-examine those who have given testimony, and then, Jordan, there's going to be a long list that we would call as well. That's how it works. Both sides would get to call. Jordan, I really thought that moment was probably when that vote on whether or not to open the door to more witnesses, I thought that's when it was probably determined.
We're going to start taking your phone calls, too. I'd love to answer as many questions as I can to you about how this process worked out, what it was like on the floor of the Senate during the breaks, during the arguments as well, how senators react, because the shot you see most of the time is maybe some of the House, of us, and then the speaker, but you don't get to see the senators and their reactions, kind of their facial expressions. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I think you'll hear more about this today when you hear the closing arguments from my dad. I don't know if we'll get to those live on the air today, so you just check those out, and we'll bring them to you tomorrow. But this was one. This was kind of his final statement before the witness vote, which, of course, we won in the sense that to start the process of winding down this impeachment trial in the Senate, which will officially be wound down on Wednesday when the vote to acquit occurs at 4 p.m. Eastern time. This is his final statement from my dad. It's number six on our list, and I think you'll hear a more extended version of this today. This is kind of giving you a preview. I know it's giving you a preview of what to expect to hear more of from my dad as he makes his final remarks. I mean, it truly is an honor. One, let me just say this. It is an honor to represent the President of the United States. It is an honor to speak in the well of the United States Senate or even be on the team there. Representing the President of the United States of America. It's an honor to defend the Constitution, to defend the country, and to defend not just President Trump, and let me say that is an honor in itself, but to defend the office of the President as well for future presidents. Take a listen to this, and you can watch it if you're on Facebook and Periscope. Number six, later in the evening on Friday night.
I am not going to take the time, your time, which is precious, to go over in each and every allegation about witnesses that I could. I could do it. I could stand here for a long time. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to say this. They created the record. Do not allow them to penalize the country and the Constitution because they failed to do their job. With that, Mr. Chief Justice, we yield our time.
Thank you, counsel.
So again, I think you will hear an extended version, a more in-depth version of that today from my dad. So a little preview for you there today, something you're not going to get anywhere else or in any other broadcast. Let me start taking some of your phone calls. We'll go right to the lines people have been holding on the longest. Ray calling from Georgia on Line 5. Ray, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Jordan, thank you so much, and congratulations on a great case you guys presented.
Thanks,
and I want to say thank you for that. First of all, a couple things. I did not vote for Trump the last election.
Okay.
I am Hispanic, and I'm voting for him this next one because of all the sham stuff that I'm seeing and injustice.
Hearing that from a lot of people, Ray, and you know, I'm hearing it from a lot of people, not just because we were kind of stuck in that bubble of the Senate trial, but when I did turn on the news and they were going out to Iowa and places where the president was holding a lot of rallies, places like New Jersey and Ray, I was hearing that from a lot of people. They weren't necessarily voters of the president, but he's been put under so much, this presidential harassment that's now rose to the level of impeaching him and having him go through the Senate trial. And again, I mean, that's about as short as you can make a Senate trial for impeachment. And it was still started out January 21st. It will finish February 5th, this Wednesday. But Ray, go ahead.
So here's my question. It is around the impeachment. How is it that they can make the changes so that no other president has to go through this type of scrutiny or bullying, is the way I see it, in the future? Because, of course, they went ahead and impeached him unrightly, and yet they're still, there's going to be the stain on him.
Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
It's like being this. It's like being charged with a crime or charged with some kind of wrongdoing and then being fully acquitted of it, fully exonerated. That's what will happen with the president. So it's not really a stain forever. And it's not – I would not compare it to the Clinton situation where it was clear he violated the law. There was no debate that Bill Clinton – committed a crime. He lost his license to practice law. He committed a crime. He lied under oath. There was a lot of different scenarios there. There was a true independent counsel in this phase. But here, I think, then, where the problem was is there was no crime. It was completely partisan. The House was not relying on the special counsel like the Mueller investigation because there's nothing to go off there to impeach the president. They relied totally on a Democrat-led investigation, ex parte investigation, as we called it, by Adam Schiff and a little bit by Jerry Nadler, not very much. Jerry. That was another favorite part from the closing night. And I think you got to see the true Adam Schiff when he came under pressure. A guy who, yeah, he's a great talker. I'll give him that, advocating for his cause. What I won't give him is someone who ever answers a question. Ever answers a question. It's bizarre to say the least, but it was the first time. I love this. That it was the first time, really. I mean, our House members, whether it was Elise Stefanik, and I saw a lot of them while we were up there, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, Congressman Ratcliffe, the list goes on and on. They did as great of a job as they could while Adam Schiff was in control of these committees. Steve Castor, from the House, their attorney. But this was the first time Adam Schiff had to face real attorneys on the opposing side who got the same amount of time as him, who got to answer questions, and then the senators got to ask him questions directly too. And when you saw that happen, I'm already seeing reports, Stan, that the Senate Intel Committee is calling the whistleblower to testify.
Yeah, those reports came out today, Jordan, and you're right. I mean, the minority members in the House of Representatives were not allowed meaningful participation. I mean, these proceedings were not adversarial, and the only witnesses they were eventually allowed to call were ones that Democrats had called first. So make no mistake about it. Those are Adam Schiff's witnesses. They're just ones that Republicans were willing to put their name on. Look, I think this is important. Raise question, Jordan, from the point you made, certainly, that exoneration of the president is actually better than just throwing out the case. I do agree with you on that. But I also think there's a second very important issue here, and that had to do with the vote that was taken to not call additional witnesses. Jordan, to me, the important point there is what you sort of alluded to. This is the Senate saying to the House, we are not going to do your job. And Jordan, that is not just we as senators don't want to do work. That is a very important precedent-setting measure to say we are not going to live under perpetual impeachment. Our founder set a very high bar that you have to clear through impeachment, and the House, under the Constitution, has to clear that hurdle, Jordan. So I honestly think that vote went well beyond this case, and it preserved a very careful balance that our founders put in place. It was a very strong move to move against the perpetual impeachment that we've warned about so much on this broadcast.
Absolutely. Now, listen, I want to add Diana on Facebook, and we'll take more of your calls when we come back for this for our second half hour. But I can answer this one quickly. She said, when is the final judgment going to happen? How will that work? 4 p.m. Eastern time. Final arguments are today, so you won't hear any more from the president's legal team. You won't hear any more from Adam Schiff, thank God, right? That one, and his House managers. I'm sure you'll hear press conferences. They'll do lots of interviews, but he will not get his 2 hours at a time to be on every TV station. So Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, there will be a vote. That vote will ultimately lead to President Trump being exonerated. It'll be acquittal, formal, and that will be it. He will be acquitted. The impeachment is over. It is not forever. It is over. And it will have failed. So Wednesday at 4 p.m. And there's a lot in between now and then. There's the Iowa caucus tonight. There's the State of the Union tomorrow night. The president will be delivering. And then there is the final vote as well. So we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We will get into a little bit about Iowa too, just because it's working differently this year for the Democrats. We'll be back on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host,
Jordan Sekulow.
You know, talking to Than, like what this was like from his perspective and from my perspective, and usually we have pretty similar, we're both on the radio broadcast, but to be on the floor of that Senate, I will tell you now, I just got back from this, and I started out on the day one of the trial where we went to like 2 a.m. on rules battles, where we each had 2 hours aside to debate every rule amendment. We voted every one of those amendments down, proposed changes to the rule. And that, you know, that started on January 21st. This trial will eventually be over with the vote on Wednesday at 4 p.m., February 5th. Now, actually, for impeachment-wise, if you count out, if you take out the 33 days, which was also so damaging to their case, this was a national emergency, it posed this national threat, immediate threat to our country, but we can hold it for 33 days. When you take those days out, I mean, the president's legal team was able to get this wrapped up about as quickly as possible, and no small part to a lot of senators, too. The majority leader, Mitch McConnell, John Thune, I could go through the list who were working very hard to get this done, Lindsey Graham, and others to get this done for the president. And again, they looking big picture, too, that it was not just about President Trump, as a lot of these commentators want to say, though. Of course, that's our initial job as counsel to the president, but also about future presidents as well, and about protecting their privileges, their abilities to assert privileges. Than and I were talking about the differences. I will tell you, Than, it was at first a pretty unbelievable experience. You had to like pinch yourself a little bit about what was happening when you'd walk onto the floor of the U.S. Senate. And you're face to face. You were so close because it's not made for this kind of trial with all 100 U.S. senators. You know, you could see, and I mean, you could hear what they're kind of saying. They could kind of hear what you're saying. You got to watch your notes because the media is sitting above you. People could really see there. The Senate is small. They're looking down on you. And then even in those breaks, being able to talk to senators and move around the Senate floor. You know, from being on the political side of things, that Than you are too. That it was a pretty. I will tell you, it took a few days for that sheen to just. Washed to the side. I will tell you, it helped having just 3 days of the Democrats ripping into the president and really these personal attacks that helped pull the sheen off. But I think every day you kind of had this respect level when you first walked in of what chamber you're walking into, the Chief Justice presiding, as partisan as it got, I would say. I think what you'd see from the president's legal team, not that we would not vigorously defend the president at all points when necessary, but that ultimately that the seriousness of this cannot be missed. I mean, you know, this is only the third time in history this has happened.
Yeah, and I think that's appropriate, Jordan. I mean, I would just tell you, I've been in that chamber a few times, and one of the things that stuck out to me was, you know, that's all happening in very close proximity. We played some of the audio while you were gone of your dad interacting with manager Schiff and then with leader Schumer, and all that's happening while they're standing. I mean, they're like five, 6 feet away from each other. So the intimacy, right. And I would tell, we shared this with our Facebook viewers during the last break, Jordan, but for me watching it, and for, I think for a lot of our listeners and viewers too, the most fascinating moment was when you would be on air with us right before the proceedings started. We'd have an exchange. You only had a few minutes and then you would have to go out. And literally right after you hung up the phone, we'd see you walk onto our TV screens, you know, C-SPAN 2, Fox News, if they were covering it, whatever it was. But just the intimacy of your participation in it, I think, was the most fascinating. And I would tell you, just from our perspective, you asked this question, I think when there was an admission from manager Schiff that he said he'd 31 or 32 times during the course of his presentation, he'd proved his case. And your dad said, well, then we don't need to call witnesses. Jordan, from this side of the proceedings, I thought that's when the inevitability of the vote that was to come, I thought that's when it probably locked in.
Yes, I mean, they kept saying that. We've proved our case. We have unbelievable evidence for you to remove this president. You're going to hear that today again. But we need to call more witnesses. We need to spend more of your time. And then when we said that's going to take a long time, we said, well, we can agree to give up all due process rights. You can agree to give up all due process rights. And do this in a week. And then we said, well, not really, because we'd call all 17 that you've witnessed, that you got to call, and that we didn't get to cross-examine. Oh, no response to that. And then, boom, the vote, no witnesses. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So let's, again, we'll set the stage for you. We have got the Iowa caucus tonight. Before I get back to the phone calls, and we're watching the Senate right now still in break, and then the President's legal counsel, which I'm a member of, and this is my first day not on on the floor of the U.S. Senate. I kind of wanted to finish this out with all of you and being able to talk to you about it, especially over the next couple days. I went over my dad's closing remarks last night with him and our team. And I know the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, will have excellent closing remarks. See Ken Starr there today and others. I think the president just was able, you think about Alan Dershowitz, the team, the diversity of the team that the president was able to assemble, different kinds of legal minds, different points in their careers, who focus on different aspects of the law. Some who have been through this before, some who have always opposed these moves. It was just a wave that the House managers, you really see the difference between these trained professionals and congressmen, partisan. I'll leave it at that for right now, but extremely partisan, to say the least. But I do want to kind of set the stage for Iowa tonight. Than, we know right now the latest poll, because we didn't get the big poll that we usually get out of the Des Moines Register that CNN was going to have a big unveiling for because of some problems with, did they include names like Mayor Pete's name and stuff like that. But the truth is it shows basically almost a dead heat with maybe some polls trending in favor of Bernie Sanders. But the interesting thing tonight, some of those senators I was in the room with, like Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar, and then of course Bernie Sanders was there too. And by the way, his one question that he submitted was basically a political ad. I mean, literally, it was a political ad. It was pretty shocking to me that he even submitted that, to use that such a serious role as being really a trier, a juror in an impeachment trial. And he used that for political purposes in an election year. Again, adding to the weight about why you don't have impeachments in election years, especially when they're all partisan, in an election year when the American people get to decide in a few months. When you don't even name anything specific. In Bill Clinton's case, at least you could name a specific crime, perjury, lying under oath. I mean, here it was generic and general, and basically made up. They tried to talk about extortion. They tried to talk about bribery. They didn't include that in their articles. That also really damaged their case. Trying to bring in new charges would get you thrown out of any court. We get case dismissed immediately if you were prosecuting someone, and you tried to bring new charges in without kind of amending anything, filing new articles or anything like that. You try to bring in now you want to bring in extortion and bribery. You didn't want to put that in your articles because you couldn't get the vote to that on that, but now you want to bring that in. But overall, we do have Iowa tonight, and if a communist or a socialist comes out of Iowa with this, with a victory here, and now there's two stages to this vote, and that's what's important for, I think, why, you know, Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren being in D.C. so much this time, and Bernie Sanders not feeling the negative effects of that as much, but you can actually come out of Iowa with nothing because of the way this is tiered.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Jordan. And for the first time, we're going to get a little bit more information out of this sort of strange process than we used to. I know this is a process you've been through before, but essentially when Iowans go into caucus, they're going to make an initial selection by going to a certain portion of the room, not casting a ballot. I think a lot of people may not realize this. Yeah. They go to a certain portion of the room to declare their support for one candidate or another. And Jordan, for the first time, we're going to hear the results of that first round of selections. Now, it doesn't determine where the precinct delegates ultimately land. We don't have to get into all the minutiae there, but we will get the reporting of that first round. And then, Jordan, any candidate that has exceeded 15%, your support for that candidate locks in at that moment. But if you chose someone, say you chose Senator Klobuchar, and at your precinct she only got 5% of the vote, you on the second round of caucusing, you are free to then move to another candidate, someone who met that 15% threshold, or maybe a candidate who is going to try to reach it on the second round, Jordan. And then ultimately, at the end of that process, that is what will determine how many of those delegates at the precinct level advance on through the district level, through the state level, and then ultimately, proportionally, how many of those 41 pledged delegates out of Iowa are determined. So it's a little bit of a complex situation, yeah. But here's maybe the one takeaway I would give you. It requires organization, and that's harder to do when your candidate is back in Washington, yeah, D.C.
So Thad, is the winner tonight the winner of the second round? Truly, I mean, who, you know, we talked about this before the show. People try to spin it different ways. But let's say Joe Biden edges out Bernie Sanders in round one, but then Bernie Sanders just blows it up in round two with getting the votes of everybody who, he was their second choice and for their candidates who didn't get enough votes. It's really the second round winner who is the real winner tonight.
So technically, yeah, that's true. I mean, the second round winner is how the delegates are awarded, and ultimately, that's what you need to get the nomination. You're of course going to see the spin, Jordan. You're absolutely right. And I would tell you this. I mean, I think momentum is so important in these early stages headed to New Hampshire, which is, you know, just barely a week away. We also have that debate Friday night. For purposes of momentum, Jordan, it could be sort of a double win if someone like Sanders would come away with the first round announced win and then also get the most delegates. Right. That could propel him as you head into New Hampshire.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take some more of your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. Ed in New Jersey, line two. Ed, we got this question a lot during the time of the during the impeachment trial. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Hey, Ed.
I'm a Trump backer. I'm an ACLJ backer. I'm confused, and I'm sure a lot of us out here are. As much as we want to exonerate the president, I feel, a lot of us feel, that it would have been better. You say that it was a victory. The witness vote was a victory. But now it kind of, all it did was give the Democrats a kind of a partial victory to fall back and say, aha, see, the Republicans, they're hiding things. They don't want to go the full route. No,
here, Ed, I think that may be what they try to say. This is why that was a victory, okay? They didn't deserve a longer trial. What they presented to the Senate was so poor, was so poorly drafted, so rushed through. And there's 17 witnesses that they got and didn't allow us to cross-examine. They didn't deserve anything else. And these senators understand that. I think that's why you'll see even more Democrat, probably a couple more Democrats support dismissing or, you know, exonerating the president ultimately, who may even felt the pressure that they need to vote for witnesses. But ultimately here, and let me tell you another thing, Ed, never trust these processes. When they say more witnesses, what they wanted the whole time, and I'll let you respond to this, was more witnesses for them, and they were going to try and have our witnesses denied and say, well, they're not truly relevant, and have votes on all of those. So you see, there was going to be a political game, and I will tell you, without saying anything negative about the Republican Party and Republican senators, That is a game we were not willing to play if we didn't have to. We were ready to if we had to. But you understand, Ed, they were going to contest every witness we wanted to bring forward, and they could have had the votes to shut them down.
But the Republicans did. We were running the congressional part of it. They ran the House part.
Yes, but we're running the Senate part on a very small margin, Than. Let's be honest to everybody. Again, the final vote hasn't occurred. I'm being very careful here, but I am trying to answer your question, Ed. We are a big tent party. I think that's great about the Republican Party. It means we're diverse, and we've got people from the middle all the way to pretty far right and everything in between, libertarians and places like that who consider themselves Republicans in the United States Senate. Because of that, we don't have that same kind of party unity that Democrats often have.
We've seen it on a bunch of votes, Jordan. You ultimately have to have the votes to shut down debate and move to a close, and I think that could have been a complication. But look, I think the larger point to Ed is the one we made just a little bit ago. I think the biggest message of not taking more witnesses is the one it sends to the House. I mean, Jordan, my main concern from the beginning of this is that this was going to set a bar that was so easy to reach in the House that we would have impeachment literally every day for the rest of our lives. Every president was going to be under the threat of impeachment from the day he took office. That vote to not open up witnesses and call witnesses that the House never did was more than a message on this case. It was a message to the House that said, if we're going to take up impeachment, if we're going to overturn the will of the American voters, you are going to have to do your job in your House and you're going to have to clear a high threshold. To me, Jordan, it was more than about the votes in the United States Senate. It was about sending that message to the House and, quite frankly, a very important one.
Yeah, back. Let me take another phone call before we go into this break. Joy in Idaho, line 4. Joy, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
My question is from some of the information I'm hearing on Fox, I guess. I watched this whole thing, and they were going on and on and on about Bolton, which I think is a joke.
Yeah.
But I heard now that Pelosi is talking about subpoenaing him, putting them back before Congress, and restarting.
It will be never-ending. I will tell you this. The harassment of this president will be never ending so long as Democrats control either the House or, if they, God forbid, the U.S. Senate, which they don't, but they do control the House. It will be never ending even if he's reelected. Now, we sent a clear message with these votes is that the House can only do so much. You can harass, but when you try to take this to the Senate and you do this in a partisan way, the Senate's going to slap you down and say, go back to the House of Representatives. And do your job. So, but the president will continue to be harassed. Make no mistake. But guess what? Tough guy. Gets a lot done. Even during this whole impeachment thing, he's got so much done. We'll be right back on JSecio Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
You know, what I thought was amazing throughout this process is how much the president was able to accomplish. Sometimes I'd be at the White House in the mornings before the Trump began in, on the Capitol Hill, and then you had the USMCA signing, the first kind of steps in the peace process in the Middle East being announced. And you'd see members of Congress, you'd see senators even there on the White House grounds. And that would be before the trial would resume at 1:00. People may be asking, well, why was that? I'm sure Than mentioned it, but it's the Chief Justice. You know, John Roberts, who was performing his duty as presiding officer, still is, of this Senate trial, was still having to perform his main duty as Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, where there are cases most days of the week, and they start at 10 a.m. and are not finished until noon. And so he was literally going right from the Supreme Court to the U.S. Senate to preside over this in some hours, the wee hours of the next day and the wee hours of the morning. And so that has basically come to a close, that portion for him as well, which you could tell in his voice today. I think you could tell in a lot of our voice, but you could definitely tell in the Chief Justice's voice. And it's not like as if he was talking nonstop, but I think he read 150-some-odd questions over 2 days. It was, yeah, how many was it?
180.
180 questions. There's a lot of them start to kind of sounding the same. There's a lot to talk about there, too. Once this is done, there's a lot to talk about there. We get my dad back in about how all that process works and the interesting ones that were targeted towards, you know, the House managers that were hostile and ones that were friendly, ones that were put to both sides, and how more and more aggressive it got the later and later it got into the night. And again, you know, as we were talking about, you're just steps away from these people that you're arguing against, and in this way, and it's very unique because it's very political. It's supposed to be very legal, but it's also very political at the same time. So 1-800-684-3110. Let's get to these calls. People have been holding on. Let's go to April in Pennsylvania on line one. April, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you so much. I think you and your dad and the team have done a great job with the president's defense. Kudos to you guys. But I did have a question about the managers. When I watched all the testimony in the House side and, you know, read a lot of those documents, when they came over to the Senate side, they just came out and flat out lied to people on that platform. They lied to the senators. They lied to the people. Is there no legal ramification for that? I mean, they're in districts that are like D+40. They're never going to get voted out. They'll be there until they die. What is the legal ramification for protecting that process, the Constitution, and the whole due process event there that should have never happened?
Well, we talked about it, Than, that was Adam Schiff going to be willing to waive the speech and debate protections that he has? That's the protections that these House members have when they are speaking out of their duties on the floor of the House. To basically be protected from anything they say, whether it's true or not.
Jordan, I honestly think that's why the process arguments were so important. It was important to point out the flawed process that happened in the House. It was important for your dad to go through painstakingly the process that would have to take place if the Senate were going to try to do the House's job. Look, there might not be legal recourse for some of those statements, Jordan, but there's always a political one. And I know a district might be D+40, but look, whether it's D+40 or R+40, all of the residents of a district or a state still go to the ballots and pick their leaders. And quite frankly, if voters do think that a member has egregiously violated their terms, they ought to replace them.
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely. You know, people like Adam Schiff, it's interesting. California has a jungle primary. And there's talks of people, some well-known names like Dr. Drew and others who are thinking about getting involved in that jungle primary. So it's not that easy for them to just get reelected through how the way they even have their primary system set up. And you got also AOC and her group. They're running 30 candidates or more against more traditional House Democrats. So, again, don't just throw your hands up in the air. Elections have consequences, and there should be political ramifications for what the House has done to this president, okay? There should be, for what the House Democrats have done. They should feel this politically. Ultimately, this will be all said and done Wednesday, but they should feel the political ramifications. Let's take another phone call. By the way, the president's legal defense making its final remarks now. Pat Cipollone started off, the White House counsel, Ken Starr speaking now. I expect my dad to be speaking probably right after that or kind of towards the end, where they've got up to 2 hours. So tune into that as soon as, if you're listening to us live, Our show ends at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Tune into that right away. All the major cable news outlets at least are covering the closing arguments. And my dad does not look like we'll get to him on our broadcast, but he will probably be a little bit later on. So definitely want to tune into that. Let's go to Scott in Arizona, line six. Scott, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you for taking my call. We know that the call in question from the president was on April 21st and that Biden announced his public intent to run for office on the 25th, which was 4 days later. How could it be inferred that's political opposition rather than hypothetical opposition if he hadn't filed with the
SEC? There's a lot of inferring. That's why, Scott. A lot of inferring. And a lot of it was bogus anyways. The fact is that because you are – when you are a former vice president of the United States – and your ambassador to the Ukraine put forward by the Obama administration had to be briefed on one company in the Ukraine because of your son being on the board of it, and that company is Burisma. You don't get a pass on investigation because you decide to run for president. And let me give you the best example of that. And it was so moronic that Adam Schiff would even go there. President Trump, who they had FBI investigations going on while his campaign was going on before he won, before he ever won, before he was during the transition, FISA warrants going out, now that we know they were bogus. So again, as you heard from Hakeem Jeffries, remember he said this, it's okay if you purchase your foreign opposition, research, you just can't get the info at no cost. Which, by the way, been determined that information is not something of value when it comes to a campaign world. But again, it just points to the absurdity of their and the hypocrisy of their entire argument. How dare you even bring to light that you could investigate someone who decides to run for vice president when your job as commander-in-chief is to enforce the laws? You've got a new president in Ukraine. They want lots of resources. You're being told by your talking points and advisors, sending them hundreds of millions of dollars, including lethal aid. But there is this major corruption problem. And by the way, the ambassador to the Ukraine, the only thing she was, only company she was ever briefed on for confirmation hearings happened to be the company that Hunter Biden worked for. But he's not relevant. This is just to get political dirt on an opponent. You don't get cover. And President Trump is living proof of that. You do not get cover because you decide to run for president from law enforcement. And they set that precedent. Okay? They set that precedent. Bob Menendez set that precedent, and Pat Leahy set that precedent when they sent the letter to Ukraine telling them, hey, you better cooperate with Mueller or we get into power, may not get your funding. Right, let's not forget that, folks. Let's just not forget that. Now, remember today, watch those closing arguments by my dad. I gave you a little bit of a preview about of that. Ken Starr is going right now. I encourage you to tune that if you can, to tune right to that. To hear the closing because they will not get a rebuttal. Adam Schiff saved a lot of time, about an hour or more, to rebut. So you get to, you know, you can turn it off when he comes on. That's up to you. But you're going to see for the president's team up to 2 hours. And right now it was first Pat, White House Counsel Pat Cipollone. Now Judge Ken Starr. I think my dad will be coming up soon. So if you're listening to this broadcast live, tune into cable news.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.